Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Hippie Witch, magic for a new age. I'm your host, Joanna DeVoe, and this is a happy, hippie place where magic with a K meets the law of attraction. Thanks for joining me for episode 57 of Hippie Witch, Magic for a New Age. My name is Joanna DeVoe, and I am the book-sniffing, earth-loving creatrix behind Kick-Ass Witch, putting the K in magic, and of course, Hippie Witch, the show you are listening to right now. I also have a free ebook by that name, Hippie Witch, Peace, Love, and All That Good Shit, and you can pick up a copy of that at www.joannadevoe.com, and I have put a link to it on the description page for this episode back at Blog Talk Radio. I recommend going and subscribing to this show on iTunes, though, because if you do that, you will never miss an episode, and I know you never want to miss an episode. But also, you can listen to it like in a portable way and take it around town with you on your iPod or when you're doing the dishes or whatever. That's how I like to listen to podcasts, and I am a podcast junkie now. I not only have my own podcast, I have tons and tons and tons of podcasts that I listen to, and it's kind of replaced videos for me. I keep reminding myself, like, make more videos because I love doing the podcast and I love listening to podcasts. And I actually, there's a lot of people on YouTube that I used to watch religiously that I need to play catch up on their videos, but it's just so portable and easy to take podcasts with you, you know, on the road rather than sitting and watching a video. So I don't know why I went off on that tangent today, but I am the tangent queen, so I hope you're still hanging with me because that has nothing to do with what I want to talk about today, which is Plato and Book 7 of The Republic, in which Plato presents the allegory of the cave, which sounds really like highfalutin and cool, but it's a very simple story that absolutely pertains to what's going on today. And I didn't learn about the allegory of the cave until I was, like, in my mid-20s, I want to say, which I think is probably late, because don't people study Plato in high school and maybe even junior high? Maybe we did, and it just flew over my head. I don't know. But I learned about this in my mid-20s in a philosophy class I was taking at L.A. City College, and I was captivated and so excited about this, and it's something that I still think about now, you know, 15 plus however many years later, on a regular basis, just about every time some weird TV comes on, like, you know, drug commercials where they're listing a bunch of strange side effects, and any kind of news that feels really heavy-handed with the propaganda, I just always think about the allegory of the cave. And just other movies that have come out, modern movies have reminded me of this, and I think we're heavily influenced by Allegory of the Cave, and I'll talk about that a little bit later, but let me tell you what the Allegory of the Cave is in case you've never heard of it or if you just want to refresh your memory. It is a story, an allegory that Plato told. I'm just going to tell you the story. It's super simple. So he asks you to imagine that inside a cave there are prisoners that are kept facing a wall, and their feet and their heads, their necks are bound, so they can't look to either side. They are forced to just look straight ahead at this wall, and that is how they have been their entire life. So that is the only reality they know, because that's the only reality they have ever experienced. Behind them is a big fire, which projects not only their own shadows onto this wall, but also the shadows of basically what is a puppet show, like people passing by holding, lifting up, whatever, cutouts of animals and things. And so not only are these prisoners who can only stare at this wall for their entire lives, not only are they just seeing shadows moving, but they also, in addition to hearing their own voices, are hearing the echoes through the cave. So what they know as being reality is really just shadows and echoes. And they believe these things to be real. And they name the shadows. They believe these echoes are the voices of these shadows. And they mistake this all for reality. But then he asks, you know, suppose one day someone comes and lets one of these prisoners go and leads them to the fire. And, you know, he supposes that that prisoner would be dazzled and confused by the fire. And, you know, if you pointed out to him, like, look, see, there's a fire and there are these people moving in front of the fire and they're holding up these images and it creates shadows, that he almost wouldn't even be able to make sense of it because his entire reality was shadows. So it would take a period of acclimation and he would be confused about it all and just kind of dumbfounded and amazed. And then he asks, you know, what would happen if we took that prisoner then out of the cave and showed him the sun and the whole world that's going on outside the cave? And he talks about how dazzled and confused and amazed he would be by that reality and by this incredible bright light. And, you know, it goes on to talk about, like, you know, if he went back, if he spent time in that reality, his eyes would eventually adjust. He might originally be able only to focus on shadows and then maybe shadows and reflections before he could finally grasp the reality of the objects in front of him, and on and on and on in a process of enlightenment. But that if he went back to the cave and tried to tell the fellow his fellow prisoners what he saw and what he experienced, that they would most likely mock him, attack him, you know, on and on and on, because they only know the reality of the shadows and the echoes. So I hope I did that justice. Obviously, it's more in-depth. You can read it for free online. You can go to YouTube and watch some animated recreations of it, which I actually recommend doing if you, you know, want to get an idea of maybe what this would look like from a modern perspective. But really, my take on it, on what this all means, it's a fairly literal interpretation. There are other interpretations that speak of it being about enlightenment, education, beauty, and belief. And those are, they're all true, they're all valuable. But seeing as we only have 30 minutes together here today, I chose to kind of narrow my scope, which is just as well, because the first time I heard this story, the first time I heard Plato's Allegory of the Cave, this revelation of how we are all being controlled by the illusions of the puppeteers, it was just like this big epiphany for me. And, you know, it was like the light bulb moment that had me making all kinds of connections. And I kind of live for that. That's why I'm such a book junkie and why I love to learn. Because, you know, you're on this kind of learning plateau and then all of a sudden you hit something like Allegory of the Cave was for me. And it's like, ding, 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 all of a sudden you're making all of these connections and things just come together in this really exciting way. and the way that I see the cave is it's freakishly relevant in today's world. And I say freakishly because it was written a couple thousand years ago, obviously, but it seems to hit the nail on the head about modern culture so thoroughly. In fact, I remember when I learned about it, I was like, oh my gosh, Plato was a prophet. How did he know that this is what we are going to become? And then on learning about Allegory of the Cave further, I learned how it's not just about this, and it's about other things, like I mentioned, enlightenment and beauty and belief and all of that. But originally I was just like, whoa, dude, how did he know that we were all going to be staring into our computers and our television screens all day long to the detriment of the actual reality going on around us? And I see the cave, the allegory of the cave, as being about illusion and the ability of illusion to control, which is even deeper than illusion, that you can actually be controlled by illusions, which is something that the mainstream media and now even the independent media, as it gets savvier and savvier, has learned to use to their advantage. And you might want to blame this all on a man named Edward Bernays. Edward Bernays is, he is the self-titled father of PR, basically. He was the nephew of Sigmund Freud and the author of a book called Propaganda, which came out, I believe, in the 20s. Super crazy read, very interesting. If you're at all interested in public relations, you got to read it because all the other public relations people have, and you need to know where it started from and what it's all about and what the competition is up to. But it's also just an incredible read if you are into kind of what I'm talking about today and becoming enlightened to maybe what the media does and how it controls us very cleverly. But Edward Bernays, I could do a whole show just on him. But he was really interested in controlling the masses. Actually, he did not contribute to Nazi Germany and all of the bad things they did directly, but his work did because the Nazi minister of propaganda, Dr. Joseph Goebbels, I think is how you say his name, he was obsessed with Edward Bernays and Edward Bernays' book, Propaganda, and whatever other work that he put out, despite the fact that Bernays was a Jew. This Nazi dude was really into him, and he was the head of propaganda for Nazi Germany, and they used a lot of his techniques in brainwashing the public. So he inadvertently created this tool of tyranny and oppression that damaged so many people, but then also the United States and so many of our big corporations and former presidents were really into the work of Edward Bernays. And like I said, he is a self-titled father of PR, but he really is the father of PR and propaganda in America. So much of what is done in our mainstream media comes from this guy. So if that interests you, go check out the work of Edward Bernays. He believed that the masses, the general public, could not be trusted to think for themselves and that they should be presented with a pre-selected, predetermined, pre-thought-out set of opinions that were dictated by the captains of industry or corporations today, or what he considered men of virtue, in order to preserve democracy, which, when you think about it, isn't really democracy at all. But it was done in a really clever way, and he was really interested and noted that people who were very educated, who read newspapers and magazine articles, that they were actually the most easily misled by clever, subtle propaganda, and that those, a really clever news story and opinion piece could influence those people and even influence, authorities in some arenas, and that could further control the masses because those people are kind of like the top of the pyramid. And it's so interesting, and it makes me think about what I formerly considered my political party, the liberal Democrats. I would say I am not part of any political party anymore. I just see that as being, they've kind of divided us up into teams, the red team and the blue team, and if you're on the red team, everything the red team says is yay, and if you're on the blue team, everything the blue team says is yay, and the blue team hates the red team, and ugh, I hate listening to that stuff. But I remember when I was first really kind of waking up to what was going on, and I started noticing that liberals are very easy to manipulate because they are very smart, educated people, and they want to do good. They're not called bleeding heart liberals for nothing. They care about the environment. They care about animals. They care about kids. They care about the poor. They care that everybody gets health care. And that can really cleverly be used as leverage to manipulate these people into giving away their rights and signing away the rights of other people, which is, I'm not going to get into all of that because I don't want to get into a big political debate, and I feel like I just stepped in it perhaps with a lot of you because I know you're probably likely in that political party. But anyways, my point was that Bernays understood that really clever people can be manipulated through propaganda. It's not just, for the herds and people that don't think. It's useful for everybody. And this kind of brings us back to the cave, the allegory of the cave, an illusion. You know, if we think we are free, that is the most dangerous thing, because then we will pose no resistance. We will be compliant, and those who want us to be compliant can go about the business of doing whatever they think it is we would not let them do should we not be compliant. And using humor or entertainment to inform the public of the opinion that they want to have, he noticed, was really the way to go about it. Because if you try to overtly persuade them, they will resist, you know, especially the clever, smart people. So this has been put to great use in America, all over the world now, because our Hollywood has influenced everyone now. Everybody loves Hollywood, and we're kind of just living in a giant global Hollywood now. And so they can inform your opinion by using humor and entertainment, a kind of sleight of hand, and you don't even know it's happening to you. And I was just listening to Gary Wilson was on Jan Ervin's show, Gnostic Media, on a show called This Is Your Brain on Porn, and this is another thing, like, now I'm looking at the time and realizing I have too much to say. But basically, porn is an excellent example of what I am talking about, because what is happening to our young men and some women and some not so young men is they are becoming addicted to porn, and porn addiction is a very real thing. And I highly recommend checking out this episode. Just go Google This Is Your Brain on Porn, Gary Wilson, Gnostic Media, whatever. It will come right up. And he explains why porn is so addicting and how, you know, back in the day, boys, porn might be considered like a Playboy magazine, and a boy would masturbate looking at Playboy, but so much of that was about his imagination. And what we have done now is cut out the imagination and cut out the middleman, and now a boy gets his sexual education on the internet, and he can click through, like, you know, in 20-second increments to the most hardcore, violent, crazy porn, and he's lost his imagination. It's telling him what to think, but he's also done a lot of studies of and research about how it's the novelty of what he's seeing that is keeping him turned on and excited. It could be even disgust. So it's not just, you know, the nudity and the sexuality that's turning him on now. It's novelty, and how we've learned to basically hype up our own sexuality to manipulate people and keep them tuned in and staring at a screen, like the allegory of the cave, while life kind of passes them by. And that gets into a whole other thing about how there's this whole epidemic of impotence, men that can't get it up, boys that can't get it up, and how when they get off porn, that it actually can take, like, a young man, it can take him a year to be able to get an erection with a woman again. The older the men, apparently, the less time it takes, because they have not been indoctrinated into this whole system as early. So it's a very important issue for our boys. Parents, if you're listening, you might want to keep an eye on that. And he also did a TED Talk called The Great Porn Experiment, and in that he says, look up that, too. I recommend, if you're interested in this subject at all, The Great Porn Experiment, Gary Wilson. He says, as a culture, we can't believe that sexual activity could lead to addiction, because sex is healthy. But today's internet porn is not sex. It's as different from real sex as World of Warcraft is from checkers. So we've really separated ourselves from being natural human beings, and we've learned how to sort of manipulate our brains and highlight our brains to the point of being addicted to these screens, to the wall and the allegory of the cave. And there's an actual men's movement to unhook from porn, just as there are movements to get back to the land and grow your own food or source natural spring water. And there are those of us who recognize that the convenience illusion, it's robbing us of our humanity and life's basic pleasures like sex with a real girl. And it's screwing up our health and our relationships. And it's leaving us with the attention span of gnats, as well as, you know, making us miss out on all kinds of good stuff. Also, I told you, this is going to be a lot of talking in a short period of time, but I've got a lot to say today. The Washington Post. Just this morning, I found it this morning. I don't know what day they did the story, but I saw this on Twitter. Oh, the irony. I saw this on Twitter. Get away from the internet. Anyways, Twitter. The title was Serious Reading Takes a Hit from Online Scanning, and it was about how the way that we are scanning through really quickly on the internet, it's not just about porn, it's just about all of us being on Facebook all day long or Twitter or whatever you're on all day long and scanning through blog posts and stuff, how it's screwing up your ability to read. It says humans, they warn, seem to be developing digital brains with new circuits for skimming through the torrent of information online. This alternative way of reading is competing with traditional deep reading circuitry developed over several millennia. And I'm not saying don't go on the internet or it's bad, and you know, you got to keep up with the times, I suppose, to be relevant in the job market at the very least. And I can see that there's benefits to our brains catching up with this, and perhaps you just consider that a part of evolution. But I also think it's disturbing that people are having problems just reading a regular book. They are like skipping through the pages, and then they're not retaining the information that they are reading. And as a big old book lover, book sniffer, book hoarder, I would hate for that to happen to me. And, you know, as we are learning now after so many decades of, this applies to everything, so many decades of convenience food and, like, cutting corners in the kitchen, eating prepackaged fake food and microwave dinners, you cannot bypass the intended human experience in favor of a virtual reality without suffering consequences. There are always going to be consequences when you try to play God and when you try to step outside of nature, which is, I suppose, the message of movies like The Matrix and WALL-E and the way that I'm talking about the allegory of the cave today. WALL-E, that movie, was a revelation for me. It hit so deeply and is really one of the most profound messages about where it is we are headed if we don't wake up, much like the cave. It's about people who are contented to stare into screens and miss their entire lives as they're carted around in these weird hovercrafts sucking down sugary big gulp-like drinks. they're addicted to the illusion, and they're completely passive, easy to control, and fairly oblivious to the world around them, which isn't much of a world anymore because everyone else is doing the same thing. That movie rocked my socks. If you haven't seen it, definitely, definitely check it out. And it's so much like the allegory of the cave when I think about it. And so is The Matrix, obviously, which is why I didn't spend this episode talking a lot about The Matrix, because there's so much on the internet already about that. But, you know, Morpheus says, "The Matrix is the world that has been pulled over your eyes to blind you from the truth." And that's basically the message behind The Matrix. And it's the message behind Allegory of the Cave. Don't take the illusion for the reality. There's a thing I was watching on the Allegory of the Cave that I thought was pretty interesting because I love the Oscars every year. I've even been known to get dressed up for the Oscars and have a little Oscar party in my house. But I love it. I wanted to be an actress, and so I kind of just love to vicariously live that dream every year. But there was a video on Allegory of the Cave that went into depth about how the prisoners that are watching the wall and watching the shadows, they may even develop a reward system where they give a little reward to whichever prisoner can name a shadow the fastest or whatever. And I was thinking about that, you know, and how, you know, our whole tabloid culture and how many award shows they're on and how wrapped up some of us can get into the lives of celebrities and these illusions and even, like, how excited I get about the Game of Thrones. I counted down to Game of Thrones for weeks. I couldn't wait. Game of Thrones, Game of Thrones, Game of Thrones. and it's interesting. And I don't want to give up my Game of Thrones. I don't want to give up watching Oscars every year. I love the Twitter. I just mentioned it here. I wouldn't even have a business if it wasn't for the internet. But I do call myself Hippie Witch for a reason, and I think that all of these things tie in together. The food, the earth, the grounding, Hippie Witch, being a hippie, and calling myself a witch, they go hand in hand when I consider the way I chose those labels because of my values, and then how those labels have in turn continued to shape those values. You know, it's about eating real food, participating in nature, walking on the earth barefoot, not being a slave to the man, stepping outside this whole matrix and participating in the real deal, which is nature. Your health will suffer for it if you don't. Your mental health will probably go first. And I couldn't help but include a piece on rewilding, which is a term that Daniel Vitalis coined about, you know, getting back to our real nature and drinking real spring water, getting out and getting the vitamin D from the real sun, taking your shoes off, walking around barefoot, eating real food. All of that is about getting back to our real human nature and getting in touch with the real deal, because it's necessary to survive. And I couldn't help but include a piece about rewilding in the current module of the Psycho-Spiritual Wheel of the Year for spring equinox, because I've kind of just been waiting to talk about that, and I saw an opportunity because the weather is warming up now, and I thought, ooh, you know, I'm going to include a section on rewilding in this module and try to encourage people to get outside because the weather is changing now, and we're at the beginning of this warm half of the year where we've got all spring, summer, you know, and into fall to comfortably participate in the elements, you know, when it's less challenging perhaps than in the winter. You should do it all year round. But anyway, if you want to check that out, that's at www.psychospiritualwheelofthe.year. And yeah, I'm really excited about that. I don't know how excited everybody else is about it, but I could not wait to talk about it. And I was really happy that I saw an opportunity to get to present that in that module, because it was good stuff. And I don't want to hit people over the head with this message or impose a bunch of, I don't know, conspiracy theories on you guys about the man and how we're being manipulated. But I do want to urge you to please think for yourself, put down the smartphones and the tablets, step away from your TV sets, and get outside sometimes, most days if you can manage it. You know, meditate, read a book. A real book. Read it slow. Talk to your family. Look them in the eye. Meet up with your friends offline. And always use discernment when you are taking in any kind of media or someone else's opinion, especially if it's coming from the mouth of a particularly attractive or charismatic character. Think for yourself. And I urge you to employ this strategy when listening to next week's show, as I am going to be talking about what could be a real mind bender for some of you, and that is astrotheology and the original Passover. And I'm super excited to get to that show next week. Yay, please meet me here next Tuesday at noon, because that's going to be a fun one. And in the meantime, I send you much love. Have a great day. Peace.